Hello, listeners. This is Iris, and this is the reading of the Waterloo Cedar Falls Courier for Wednesday, March 13th. I'm your volunteer reader, Bob Young. Let's take a look at the weather forecast first thing, this coming from KCRG. Shower and storm chances increase tonight. Thursday carries slight severe risk. We're keeping an eye on the threat of severe thunderstorms on Thursday, with some indication that the risk may be shifting a bit. First, another warm and pleasant day. Before things get much more active, we're still in line for another decent spring day in eastern Iowa. Temperatures this morning are notably cooler in the north, where clearer skies and light winds allowed them to drop. In the south, some cloudier areas prevented that drop a bit, though even those areas may catch up a bit before sunrise. Things should warm steadily once the sun comes up, with clouds gradually increasing throughout the day. Highs reach the upper 60s to around 70. The evening looks mostly cloudy, with an eventual increase in the chance for showers and storms. Some scattered activity is possible in our northern zones late this evening, but the more widespread and potentially more substantial rain and storms move in from the south during the overnight hours. This round could have occasional heavy downpours, frequent lightning, and some small hail. Severe weather looks unlikely, though an isolated larger hailstone in our far southern counties cannot be totally ruled out. This shower and storm activity could linger into the morning hours on Thursday, affecting the morning commute. Plan on your trip to work or school being a little on the wet side as a result, though many areas will see precipitation diminish by later in the morning or early afternoon. That's Thursday. Slight risk for severe storms on Thursday. We then watch for the possibility that stronger storms develop during the afternoon and evening hours on Thursday. A slight risk for severe weather has been outlined by the Storm Prediction Center to cover this threat, with areas generally along and south of U.S. Highway 30, including in the risk area. After the possible lull in shower and storm activity late in the morning, new shower and storm development may take place north of a warm front in eastern Iowa. That front appears likely to be held up around the Iowa-Missouri border, with the area residing on the cool side of it. These storms would mainly carry a risk for large hail, with an outside chance of an incident of damaging winds or an isolated tornado closer to the warm front in far southern Iowa. The biggest limiting factor here could be the position of that front, which will keep the warmer and more humid air mostly out of Iowa. While some of that available energy makes it up and over the front, it will be in much lower supply than those areas in Missouri and Illinois that reach the 60s and 70s for temperatures, with dew points closer to 60. The other main ingredient for severe storms, the change in wind direction and or speed with increasing height in the atmosphere, will be ample, and that's why we're still concerned about the chance for any storm north of the front to organize and produce hail. This would be most likely between 1 p.m. and 8 o'clock p.m. on Thursday. So the bottom line is, we want you to stay weather aware during the day on Thursday. Consider this a trial run for your severe weather preparedness for the upcoming season. And check that your multiple ways to receive weather information are working right. That means checking on your weather radio, making sure that it's plugged in, tuned in, and turned on. Make sure the switch on the side is set to on. Turning cool, then even cooler. We'll still be dealing with a bit of leftover shower activity on Thursday night into the very early morning hours of Friday. But clouds should decrease a bit by daybreak, and dry weather will rule the day for the rest of it. We'll keep things a bit breezy at times with winds out of the north, and temperatures will be cooler than how we started out this week. Highs will reach the upper 40s to low 50s. Saturday shows some tendency to turn a little warmer, but only by a handful of degrees. The winds also increase, with gusts potentially headed toward the 30-mile-per-hour range. Highs will reach the low to upper 50s from north to south. In general, though, this will be the better of the 2 days of the weekend. The bigger temperature drop occurs on Sunday, following the passage of a cold front later Saturday night into Sunday morning. Highs will likely be reached soon after midnight on Sunday in the upper 40s. But afternoon temperatures will only be in the mid-30s to low 40s. When you factor in the winds, which will still be blustery and gusty, wind chills during the afternoon could have trouble moving past the upper 20s to low 30s. If you have plans for St. Patrick's Day, plan on dressing warmly. We reach rock bottom temperature-wise on Monday morning, when lows in the upper 10s to low 20s are expected. Highs on Monday only reach the upper 30s at best, despite more sunshine than on Sunday. A modest bounce back. Temperatures will turn a little bit warmer for the rest of the 9-day forecast, with highs back into the upper 40s to low 50s on Tuesday, with a mix of sun and clouds. A sunnier day on Wednesday combines with the push of a warmer air mass into the region to get temperatures closer to 60 next Wednesday. Showers and a few storms return to our weather picture by next Thursday as a storm system could develop in the region. Now, looking at the front page of the Courier today, we have two articles to read. The first is Second Funnel Looming. Lawmakers must advance some major bills by the end of the week. The story begins with a photograph of members of the subcommittee and their support staff around a very large rectangular table, and the legislators are taking notes on paper and laptop computers. Dateline Des Moines. With a second key deadline looming at week's end in the Iowa legislature, there remain many significant proposals with work still to do in just a few days, if they are to remain available for further consideration in this year's session. Defining man and woman in state law, helping schools arm teachers and other staff, creating legal penalties for causing a pregnancy to end, which could also impact fertility treatments. These are among high-profile proposals needing at least a little more legislative approval if they are to remain on track to become law this year. Even the one issue that has dominated the 2024 session like no other, Governor Kim Reynolds' proposal to overhaul the way the state's 9 area education agencies are operated and funded, still needs legislative attention by the end of this week. All of these proposals, and hundreds more, face the second legislative deadline of the 2024 session, the second funnel. By the end of this week, legislation must be approved by one full chamber, either the Iowa House or the Senate, and at least a committee in the opposite chamber, in order to remain eligible for consideration moving forward. Any bill that fails to garner that much legislative support will be considered dead. However, leaders in the majority party have the ability to resurrect the dead bills through multiple legislative tools, and sometimes they do. The funnel deadline does not apply to bills that deal with tax policy, the state budget, or other spending measures. So bills that deal with, for example, increasing the salaries of public school teachers and support staff, Reynolds's proposed streamlining of the state's mental and behavioral health systems, or State House Republicans' plans to further decrease state income taxes, are not subject to this week's deadline. The following bills and topics are among the many that state lawmakers must advance at some point this week if the bills are to survive this second funnel. Area education agencies. In her January 9th condition of the state address to the legislature, Reynolds set the tone for the next 4 months when she called for dramatic changes to the operating and funding structures of Iowa's area education agencies. Since that day, Reynolds has unveiled her proposal and offered changes after hearing feedback from educators and parents, and majority party Republicans in the Senate and House have introduced their own proposals. Instead of allowing state funding to go directly to the AEAs, as is currently the case, Reynolds has proposed giving school districts more direct control over special education funding and moving oversight of AEAs to the state education department instead of local boards. Senate Republicans' proposal is similar to the governor's, but keeps some of that state funding moving straight to the AEAs, and calls for the Iowa Department of Education to work with AEAs on a new oversight structure. House Republicans went a completely different route. The House bill keeps AEAs as the sole provider of special education support, while state funding for special education services would go to the school districts. Schools would be required to use that funding on services provided by the AEAs. House Republicans passed their plan out of the chamber, barely, on a 53-41 vote, with 9 Republicans voting against it. Shortly after the House's passage, the Senate was scheduled to debate the bill, but in an unusual move, it was pulled from the debate calendar and has not been seen since. Gender identity. Legislation proposed by Reynolds that would define man and woman in Iowa code based on a person's sex assigned at birth has yet to advance out of the House. House Republicans passed the bill out of committee last month over the protests of transgender Iowans and civil rights activists who called it discriminatory, arguing it would lead to the erasure of transgender and non-binary people from Iowa code. But lawmakers have yet to take up the bill on the House floor and send it off to the Senate. House File 2389 defines man and woman and several other terms in Iowa code based on a person's sex assigned at birth. The bill would also allow transgender people to be excluded from sex-segregated spaces like bathrooms and women's shelters. It would also require transgender Iowans to list both their sex assigned at birth and their post-transition sex on their birth certificate. Reynolds and Republicans said women and men possess unique biological differences and that the bill was necessary to protect the health, safety, and rights of women in spaces like domestic violence shelters and rape crisis centers. However, both the Iowa Coalition Against Sexual Assault and the Iowa Coalition Against Domestic Violence are registered opposed to the bill. LGBTQ and civil rights advocates say the bill is another attack on transgender Iowans, and its use of pro-segregation language should raise alarm. It says the term equal does not mean same, and that separate accommodations are not inherently unequal. Arming school teachers. A bill to create a licensing process for K-12 school staff to carry guns on campus has yet to advance out of a Senate committee to remain eligible after this week's funnel. House Republicans passed the proposal along party lines in February. The bill was proposed in the wake of January's fatal shooting at Perry High School. Republicans hope the bill, House File 2586, will make insurance companies less resistant to covering a school that allows its teachers and staff to carry firearms, which is already legal under Iowa code. Democrats have opposed the proposal and say that introducing more guns to school grounds will not make students safer. The bill would also devote state funds to allow large schools to hire private security officers or school resource officers. A Senate subcommittee advanced the bill last week, sending it to the full Education Committee. It must pass out of the committee to remain eligible after this week. Fetal homicide, IVF. House Republicans introduced and passed out of the chamber a proposal they said would increase penalties for individuals whose action causes a pregnancy to be terminated. But House Democrats warned the legislation, because it also replaces in state law the terms human pregnancy with unborn person, could jeopardize fertility treatments for families hoping to get pregnant. During debate in the Iowa House, Democrats argued the proposed legislation would make in vitro fertilization illegal because, as part of that process, extra embryos are sometimes frozen, stored, or discarded. House File 2575 passed the House, but has not yet been taken up by the Senate. Response to school fire alarms. Bill's focus. Des Moines. A bill advancing in the legislature would require public and private schools to determine why a fire alarm went off before evacuating children from classrooms. Senate File 2191 was spurred by a policy developed by the North Scott School District in response to the 2018 school shooting at Marjory Stoneman Douglas High School in Parkland, Florida, where the shooter pulled a fire alarm. The bill unanimously passed the Senate last week and advanced out of a House subcommittee Monday. The bill, introduced by Senator Chris Cornoyer, a Republican from LeClaire, requires all charter, public, and accredited non-public schools to include a policy in their emergency operations plan on how individuals in the school building should respond when a fire alarm is activated outside of a scheduled fire drill to protect the individuals in case the alarm was activated due to an active shooter on school grounds. Quote, "This takes care of when you pull a fire alarm, you don't create a target-rich environment for a shooter," said Representative Stephen Bradley, Republican from Cascade, who served on the House subcommittee. Margaret Buckton, representing the Urban Education Network of Iowa and the Rural School Advocates of Iowa, said school staff can very quickly check the alarm panel to see where the threat is, look at video feeds, check for smoke, and conduct firsthand inspections to confirm the threat before issuing a building-wide evacuation. Both groups are registered in support of the bill. Penalties for grooming by teachers. Iowa lawmakers passed a bill that would require school districts to report to state officials if a licensed employee is disciplined for grooming or abusing a student. Current law requires that districts must report to the State Board of Educational Examiners, the state's educator licensing body, if a teacher or other license holder is disciplined for conduct that constitutes, quote, "soliciting, encouraging, or consummating a romantic or inappropriate relationship with a student." House File 2487 would add grooming behavior and abusing a student to the list of actions that must be reported to the board if an employee is disciplined. Grooming behavior is defined in the bill as, quote, "any attempt to seduce, solicit, lure, or entice a student or a person believed to be a student to participate in a sex act or engage in any unlawful sexual conduct," unquote. If the Board of Educational Examiners has evidence that a school staff member committed a crime, the board would need to report it to authorities under an amendment House lawmakers added on Monday. The amendment would also remove the 3-year limitation on investigating a complaint if it falls under the grooming behavior definition. The bill passed the House unanimously on Monday. A Senate companion bill has not been passed out of committee. Topsoil bill resurrected. Republicans, in a rare move, resurrected a bill that failed to pass the Iowa House last week during floor debate. The bill, Senate File 455, passed the House Monday following a motion to reconsider. It initially failed to pass the chamber on March 6th on a 49-44 vote, with 16 Republicans joining all Democrats in voting against it. 7 House members were absent or did not vote. Senate File 455 would prohibit counties and cities from adopting regulations stricter than what the state permits for topsoil management at construction sites. It also would restrict the regulations local jurisdictions can place on the stormwater infrastructure required for new developments. During floor debate, proponents said the bill was designed to make housing more affordable for developers and homeowners. Opponents said it would infringe upon local governments' ability to regulate stormwater. The bill was amended by the House and now heads back to the Senate for approval. Iowa AG joins GOP lawsuit on EPA rule. Republican Iowa Attorney General Brenna Byrd has joined a multi-state lawsuit seeking to block the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency from setting tougher air emission standards and tightening limits on particulate matter generated by factories, power plants, and other industrial users. Republican attorneys general from 24 states filed a joint challenging, stating that a new EPA rule would raise costs for manufacturers, utilities, and families, and could block new manufacturing plants and infrastructure, such as roads and bridges. Texas filed a separate suit, as did business groups led by the U.S. Chamber of Commerce and National Association of Manufacturers. Environmental and public health groups have hailed the new soot rule, finalized last month, saying it will help improve air quality and benefit children and older adults with asthma and those with heart and lung conditions, as well as people in low-income and minority communities adversely affected by decades of industrial pollution. Republicans and industry groups say the United States already has some of the strictest air quality standards in the world, more stringent than the European Union and far stricter than major polluters such as India, Indonesia, and China. The GOP attorneys general argue the new EPA rule would block the permitting of new manufacturing facilities and drive good-paying jobs out of Iowa and overseas. Quote, "The Biden administration's latest green scheme threatens American jobs and businesses," Byrd said in a statement. Quote, "With this radical mandate, costs will soar for Iowa families and businesses, driving good-paying jobs out of Iowa and to other countries. I'm suing to protect Iowans' hard-earned money, keep American businesses at home, and halt the Biden EPA's illegal mandate," unquote. Iowa's unemployment rate unchanged. Iowa's seasonally adjusted unemployment rate remained unchanged at 3% in January, slightly higher than a year ago, but below the national rate. The state's jobless rate was 2.9% 1 year ago. The U.S. unemployment rate remained at 3.7% in January. The number of unemployed Iowans fell by 1,100 in January to 50,900. The total number of working Iowans decreased by 1,200 to 1,653,800. The state's labor force participation rate decreased to 67.3% from a revised December rate of 67.5%. Quote, "January's report was mixed. On the positive side, it shows the total number of non-farm jobs remains 12,700 above last year's total, even after retail businesses pared 2,000 jobs following the holidays," unquote. Beth Townsend, executive director of Iowa Workforce Development, said in a statement, quote, "We also saw 2,300 people leave the workforce voluntarily in January." U.S. inflation up again as prices remain elevated. President highlighted cost increases and shrinkflation in speech. This coming from the Associated Press today. Dateline is Washington. Consumer prices in the United States picked up last month, a sign that inflation remains a persistent challenge for the Federal Reserve and for President Joe Biden's re-election campaign, both of which are counting on a steady easing of price pressures this year. Prices rose 0.4% from January to February, higher than the previous month's figure of 0.3%, the Labor Department said Tuesday. Compared with a year earlier, consumer prices rose 3.2% last month, above January's 3.1% annual pace. Excluding volatile food and energy prices, so-called core prices also climbed 0.4% from January to February, matching the previous month's rise. Core inflation is watched closely because it typically provides a better read of where inflation is likely headed. In his State of the Union speech last week, Biden criticized many large companies for engaging in price gouging and shrinkflation, in which a company shrinks the amount of product rather than raising the price. Quote, too many corporations raise prices to pad their profits, charging more and more for less and less, Biden said. Now to a story written by Courier staff. Cedar Falls Natatorium Project receives $400,000 state grant for indoor pool facility. Dateline Cedar Falls. The Natatorium Project at the new Cedar Falls High School was awarded a $400,000 community attraction and tourism grant on March 7th by the state's Enhance Iowa Board. The Natatorium, in an indoor pool complex currently under construction at the schools on 27th Street west of Hudson Road, is a collaborative project between the City of Cedar Falls, Cedar Falls Community School District, Blackhawk County, and the public. The project has been spearheaded largely by Jump In, a group of more than 550 community members. The members have advocated for the project and coordinated key fundraisers for the Natatorium. The facility continues a 45-year partnership between the city and school district to provide indoor pools, not only for area students, but for the entire community as well. The state grant is contingent on raising additional funds for the completion of the project. Quote, we are excited to have the opportunity to bring in state dollars to help complete the community Natatorium, Lorelei Redfern, co-chair of Jump In, said in a news release from the city. Quote, this grant is conditional on raising $312,000, and we only have until May 31, 2024, to raise this amount from individuals and businesses. This is just 1.5% of the total project cost, and we believe our community will rise to the occasion to make sure the Natatorium can be completed and become a valuable asset for our city, unquote. The community Natatorium will be open to the public and replace the outdated existing indoor public pools in Cedar Falls, located at Holmes and Pete Junior High, which are almost 50 years old. The new facility utilizes an innovative design to allow for multipurpose use. The goal is to create one of the best aquatic facilities in Iowa to allow the Cedar Valley a new opportunity to promote health and recreation while also attracting families to aquatic programming and drawing athletic events to the area. According to the release, Iowa Travel Industry Partners Economic Impact Calculator estimates that the economic impact from tourism with new and expanded events will be more than $2.5 million annually. And now, listeners, we just want to take a moment to remind you that you're listening to the reading of the Waterloo Cedar Falls Courier for Wednesday, March 13th on IRIS, that's IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind and the Print Handicapped. Now, this announcement.
What if, instead of looking down on people struggling with using drugs, we saw them as people instead? People who have interests and passions, people who have loved ones they care about, and loved ones who care about them. They have a very powerful illness, and they need help and support so they can live the life they want and deserve. See the person, not the addiction. Learn more at yourliveiowa.org, brought to you by the Iowa Department of Public Health.
Now let's turn to the opinion section. For our first editorial, we turn to the Des Moines Register, titled, "Immigrants Serve the Common Good, Including in Iowa. Those are the facts." The author here is Jan Flora, who is a professor emeritus at Iowa State University. In the College of Agriculture, he was an extension community sociologist. I know that using facts is out of style, but I am just a facts kind of guy. Using facts, I conclude that unauthorized immigrants are a boon to this country and to all Iowans. Iowa has more job openings than workers. Since the pandemic, population growth is slower than most neighboring states, due mainly to out-migration of native Iowans. Were it not for the net in-migration of foreign-born persons, the state would have lost population over the past 3 years. Rural areas are declining in population, and rural institutions are shedding functions or closing altogether. Hospitals, nursing homes, schools, grocery stores, pharmacies. Storefronts in rural towns are boarded up, except for towns receiving large numbers of immigrants beginning in the 1990s. Quote, sales are strong, new housing is going up, schools burst at the seams. While other local Iowa communities depopulate, Buena Vista County grows. It is an anomaly driven by food processing and immigration, unquote. Social Security recipients in Iowa have ballooned as boomers retire. Nationally, workers paying into Social Security have decreased as women of childbearing ages and their partners no longer have the 2-plus children needed to fully replace them. Educated natives are leaving Iowa. Workers are scarce in nursing homes, child care centers, hospitals, and schools. Iowa's immigrants work in meatpacking, 45% are immigrants, animal production, 16%, and nursing facilities at 12%, and as packaging machine operators, 53%, maids and housekeepers, 26%, construction laborers, 18%, and janitors, 15%. Remember, these were frontline jobs during the pandemic. Employers must deduct 6.2% from workers' paycheck for the Social Security Trust Fund, plus 1.45% for Medicare Hospital Trust Fund. Using the most reputable annual estimates of unauthorized immigrants in the U.S., for each year, 10.5 million in 2021, I calculated the amount they paid into Social Security from 1990 through 2021, based on data in New American Economy Research Fund 2021, and from Pew. They contributed $275 billion to $300 billion over 3-plus decades, plus the law prohibits their receiving Social Security benefits. Immigrants also contribute to the well-being of us retirees by extending the positive balance in Medicare by several years. Because non-citizen immigrants, including unauthorized immigrants, are much younger than the U.S.-born population, a larger share of these immigrants are in the workforce. From 2012 to 2018, non-citizen immigrants' net contributions to Medicare were $75 billion. U.S. citizens received $98 billion more than they paid in. Unauthorized immigrants cannot receive Medicare. They are also excluded from SNAP food aid, Obamacare, temporary assistance to needy families, Medicaid, Children's Health Insurance Program, and supplemental security income. Immigrant children are eligible for WIC food aid and free and reduced price school lunches. Unauthorized immigrants contributed $24 billion in federal, state, and local taxes and spent $170 billion to $200 billion in the U.S. economy in 2019. The Congressional Budget Office's 2024 Outlook report calculated that new immigrants expand the workforce and foster economic growth. The CBO projected that increased immigration over the next 5 years would likely add 0.2 percentage points annually to GDP, pushing GDP to only 0.2 of a point below the boom years of 2002 to 2007. Still, the leaders of our two political parties engage in immigration silliness. Governor Kim Reynolds recently announced she would send the Iowa National Guard to Texas for a third time to legitimize Governor Abbott's efforts to carve out his own immigration policy. In 2021, Reynolds spent $300,000 in state funds to send Department of Public Safety officers to the Texas border. In mid-2023, she used nearly $2 million from the Federal American Rescue Plan Act for National Guard and DPS officer visits. Congress specified that ARPA funds sent to the states should pay state and local governments and schools for pandemic-related losses. It is inappropriate to use ARPA monies to help a state independently exercise a federal function. Since April 2022, immigrants have surged across the Mexican border. The Biden administration, afraid of its own shadow, is an unconvincing echo of the Republicans, even proposing actions that Biden has criticized Trump for, endorsing a warmed-over version of Trump's Remain in Mexico policy, and pushing a bill that would curtail the internationally recognized right of asylum. Larry Zimpelman, ex-CEO of Principal Financial Group, recently explained that when his company expanded decades ago, it drew young people from mid-sized rural cities like Osceola and Grinnell. But because of Iowa's slow population growth and the emptying out of smaller rural communities, that source of employees has dried up. He lamented that for two decades, executives have been telling state officials that Iowa needs to recruit more immigrants, to no avail. It is time for residents seeking the common good to join with local businesses, government, and civic leaders to push for a welcoming and orderly immigration policy at state and national levels. Now, from the New York Times, written by Paul Krugman, we have an editorial titled Sex Trafficking, De Facto Lies, and Immigration. On Thursday, Katie Britt, the junior senator from Alabama, delivered the Republican response to the State of the Union address. Her overwrought performance has been widely mocked. That's okay for late-night TV, but I'm not going to join in that chorus. What I want to do instead is focus on the centerpiece of Britt's remarks, a deeply misleading story about sex trafficking that she used to attack President Biden. Her use of the story, which turns out to have involved events in Mexico way back when George W. Bush was president, isn't technically a lie, since she didn't explicitly say that it happened in the United States on Biden's watch. She did, however, say, quote, "We wouldn't be okay with this happening in a third world country. This is the United States of America, and it's past time we start acting like it. President Biden's border crisis is a disgrace," unquote. It's a clear attempt to mislead, the moral equivalent of a lie, and the careful wording actually suggests that she knew she was being misleading and wanted an escape hatch if someone called her bluff. To really understand the significance of her de facto lie, however, we need to put it in political context. Over the past few months, there's been a palpable shift in Republican rhetoric away from attacks on the Biden economy and toward dire warnings about, quote, migrant crime. This shift has, in part, been forced by the fact that the Biden economy is actually doing very well these days, with inflation receding, while unemployment remains near a 50-year low. In political terms, the narrative of a bad economy seems to be fading. If I were a Republican strategist, I'd be especially worried about the changing tone of news coverage. The San Francisco Fed maintains a daily index of, quote, news sentiment. In the summer of 2023, although the economy was arguably already performing pretty well, this index was roughly as low as it was in the depths of the Great Recession. Since then, however, it has shot up to levels roughly comparable to those that prevailed on the eve of the COVID-19 pandemic. Republicans then need a new issue, and there really does seem to have been a surge in illegal attempts to cross our southern border. So there are strategic reasons for Donald Trump and his party to hype the dangers of migrant crime and for Trump and his allies to maximize the fear factor by blocking bipartisan legislation that would have helped secure the border. My guess, however, is that Trump rants about migrant crime aren't purely strategic. He has a history of being obsessed with alleged crimes by dark-skinned people, going all the way back to his demand after the arrests of the Central Park Five, who were eventually exonerated, to reinstate the death penalty. And his claims about the dangers posed by migrants are so extreme that they may well be self-defeating. The other day, for example, he declared, quote, I will stop the killing. I will stop the bloodshed. I will end the agony of our people, the plunder of our cities, the sacking of our towns, the violation of our citizens, and the conquest of our country, unquote. Which towns and cities exactly have been sacked and plundered? Did Attila the Hun swing by for a visit while I wasn't looking? Yes, figuring out how best to secure our borders is a real issue, but the data just don't show that there's a crisis of migrant crime. Indeed, homicides in America surged in 2020, a year in which Trump was still president, and apprehensions at the southern border were way down. By contrast, in the past couple of years, the homicide rate has come down, even as border activity has increased. So what do you do when numbers don't support your dystopian fantasies? You zero in on the most horrific individual stories. Without question, the killing of Lake and Riley, for which an undocumented immigrant has been charged, is devastating. But in a country as big as ours, it's almost always possible to find examples of unspeakable tragedies involving individual members of whatever group you name. There are probably more than 10 million undocumented immigrants in the United States. Based on the available evidence, however, immigrants are less likely than native-born Americans to commit crimes. In any case, the migrant crime wave, the, quote, plunder of our cities, Trump seems to endlessly decry, is a myth. But it may be a myth Trump believes in, and the possibility that in this instance he may be actually sincere is alarming. Why? Because if Trump really believes migrants are an existential threat, if he wins in November, as president, he might go through with his plan to engage in sweeping raids and mass deportations, very likely catching up many people who simply look as if they might be undocumented immigrants. So don't wave away Britt's remarks as a mere example of bad acting. They may be the harbinger of a reign of terror that will wreak havoc in America. Next, we have an editorial which was printed in the Storm Lake Times Pilot titled, Reynolds' Agenda Falters. This was written by the editor, Art Cullen. Governor Kim Reynolds put reorganization of government at the center of her legislative agenda this session, it is not working out well. If you judge by her disastrous plan to gut area education agencies, legislators were overwhelmed with protests from families who depend on AEAs for services to their children, such as counseling, speech pathology, and hearing, and other special education services. Republican leaders backed off the Reynolds agenda. Last we heard, they were talking about making some media services optional, a way out of the morass without totally losing face. If their backtrack is brisk, they may want to pick it up a step. The Des Moines Register, Iowa poll reported Sunday that 56% of those surveyed hold a favorable view of AEAs, compared to 20% who hold an unfavorable view. Similarly, the Iowa poll has found that a strong majority of Iowans are not in favor of private school vouchers, another pet project of the governor, and corporate charter schools. The message we take is that most of us support strong public education, and the governor's program undermines it. However, if you are bound and determined to eliminate the state income tax for your wealthy corporate benefactors, then you must start chopping what you consider marginal state programs, like counseling for children. We must close down more schools, like the one at Early, or the property taxes will choke us. We must let the Storm Lake Marina go to seed. Close the nursing homes at Albert City and Newell. That is the vision of the Reynolds agenda. Iowans are not in lockstep with it. Yet, they keep pushing. The governor wants your birth sex listed on your driver's license and has pushed through a bunch of anti-gay legislation, and the public is not necessarily on board. More Iowans are opposed to the sex at birth ID, 49%, than favor it at 44%. And most Iowans don't believe in banning abortion at 6 weeks. They do like Reynolds' income tax cuts until it cuts to the quick on AEAs or in bans on public agencies accepting land near the river for wildlife conservation. They don't like the paint peeling on the marina sign or the lousy condition of Highway 7. At some point, there will be a price to pay for attempting to choke the life out of Iowa with a boot on the throat of the vulnerable. Next, justice delayed, justice denied. Donald Trump will be on the November ballot as the Republican presidential nominee. It is unlikely that Trump will be tried for criminal charges before then, as the former president attempts to delay justice until he can pardon himself for whatever, including a refusal to leave office. If justice is delayed, justice is denied the American people. They will understand. They will deliver a verdict on behalf of democracy and the rule of law that will see the re-election of President Joe Biden. If the Republicans mean what they say, that Biden is corrupt and a fool, if Trump is able to skirt justice by delay, as he always has done, the electorate will rise for Biden because we know we have been deprived of the facts under the law. Of course, Biden already beat Trump once. The Republicans failed to take control of the Senate in the 2022 midterm elections, thanks to Trump. Even the people who endorse him fear that he will abandon Europe and Russia's aggression. People who are nervous about the crowded border know that Trump and the House Republicans killed the border bill compromise for leverage in the general election. Those same people do not like the Nazi rhetoric of, quote, poisoning our blood, unquote. Finally, Trump will have a hard time making an argument that America is failing when unemployment is at a record low, economic growth is strong, and inflation is in check. Biden is struggling for support within his own party. His base will galvanize as the threat of another criminal presidency nears. Trump may think he is dodging bullets by delaying or diverting his prosecution. The opposite could prove true as voters tap into their core belief that nobody is above the law and that justice must prevail. The Democrats will have plenty of money to drive home that point, while Trump is spending his campaign account on attorneys trying to keep him out of jail. Lawmakers need a history lesson on the rise of autocrats and fascists. This was printed in the Iowa Capital Dispatch and was written by Thomas R. O'Donnell. So far this winter, Republicans have introduced multiple bills in the Iowa General Assembly designed to battle a fever dream of conservative buzzwords and bugaboos, most pumped with disinformation and exaggeration from politicians and pundits. The latest education bills, House File 2330 and House File 2329, are smorgasbords of right-wing resentment and grievance. The original bills took on the largely mythical critical race theory, CRT, in schools, plus social-emotional learning, SEL, a longstanding and successful technique that prepares children to learn. SEL is the latest target for conservative demonization. The House, thankfully, dropped the CRT and SEL bans from the bill it passed on February 28th. With these bills, Republicans stray far from beyond their expertise, with a few exceptions for the former educators in their ranks, to dictate what Iowa schools should teach about history. HF 2330 would, the Des Moines Register reports, mandate lessons on the, quote, history and meaning of the United States flag and national anthem, the, quote, cultural heritage of Western civilization, the United States and the state of Iowa, and, quote, the study of and devotion to the United States' exceptional and praiseworthy history, unquote. It seems that the legislators themselves need a history lesson on the patterns found in the rise of autocrats and fascists. Many Iowa Republican politicians, the governor included, are following some of those patterns, whether consciously or unconsciously. The exaltation of nationality, elevation of preferred culture over others, attacks on intellectuals and experts, attacks on freedom of thought, demonization of a minority or underclass, favoritism toward and/or endorsement of a particular belief or religion, limits on or active persecution of opposing parties, voting restrictions, limits on labor organizations. Bills that would do some or all of this are before the Iowa legislature this session. They're threats to democracy and do little to improve daily life for Iowans. What legislators can do to solve real problems, address agricultural pollution that fouls our rivers and streams and is killing us with cancers, support public schools so everyone, whether from the smallest town to the largest city, can get ahead with a good education, improve nursing home regulation to protect our most vulnerable citizens, ensure Iowans have food and adequate shelter so they can maximize their potential, and ensure health care that rural Iowans need. These would be accomplishments Republicans could truly brag about. Now on the sports page, Clark Sparks, number 3 Iowa's comeback for Big Ten tourney title, three-peat in overtime win over Nebraska. Caitlin Clark overcame a cold start to score 30 of her 34 points after halftime and help third-ranked Iowa rally past Nebraska with a score of 94-89 in overtime to win a third straight Big Ten tournament. Story written by Dave Campbell, AP sports writer. And the story opens with a photograph of Caitlin Clark as she celebrates within a cloud of confetti after Iowa beat Nebraska in overtime. Dateline Minneapolis. Hannah Stolke had 25 points and 9 rebounds for the Hawkeyes, who trailed by 13 points late in the first half, while their superstar Clark missed all 9 of her 3-point attempts. The all-time NCAA leading scorer finished 5-for-17 from deep, had 12 assists, and hit the dagger three-pointer with 51 seconds left in overtime for an 89-97 lead just 16 seconds after Logan Nestle's three-pointer had put the Cornhuskers in front. Quote, "This was definitely the hardest tournament to win out of the last three," Clark said. Quote, "I am so proud of our team. They are so resilient. Our fans were here today, and they were incredible. If it weren't for them, I don't think we win," unquote. Quote, "I do want to say Nebraska just played an outstanding game," Iowa coach Lisa Bluder said. "It took everything we had to win this game, obviously. You all saw it. Then I have to acknowledge our fans. They're amazing. They show up in Carver. They show up here. They show up in Dallas. They show up everywhere. We are just so thankful for them." Quote, "I thought we fought hard tonight, and we had to. It's not very often we have fought from behind. This was our biggest deficit at halftime. We just tried to reset at halftime. I thought they came out, and that third quarter was really good. Really good. Then we lost the lead, and they fought back again. I'm incredibly proud of our group," unquote. Curling off high screens was a recipe for success. One fan clutched a clever sign that read, quote, "Iowa has better corn," unquote. And now, listeners, that's going to do it for today's reading of the Waterloo-Cedar Falls Courier for March 13th. I'm your volunteer reader, Bob Young. Remember, you can listen to a recording of this reading of the Courier or of the other newspapers around the state that we read. Just visit our website, iowaradioreading.org, at any time. And we want to thank you for listening to your IRIS, Iowa's first and only radio reading service.